This week on the show, a heartbreaking Patriots loss, what it means for the team in the shape of the AFC. The winter meetings are underway, and the Red Sox are big players despite just winning the World Series. And we debate the worst state in the union. All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Tuned into the Callin' It podcast, Alex Barth along with Alex Lebowitz. We are recording on Thursday, December 13th. We are powered by CLNS Media. You can check them out online at clnsmedia.com. And I just want to get right to it, Lebowitz. No time for pleasantries, because as painful a regular season loss I can remember in Boston sports, perhaps in my lifetime.
It's up.
I hear your dogs complaining about it in the background.
Can you hear that? I was worried
yes,
about that.
Dogs. It might get us some listeners.
Yeah, who knows? It was a brutal loss. I mean, it wasn't the most brutal loss, regular season loss I've ever seen. Shaughnessy did he made that point as well, and I don't agree with that.
What was that? The worst regular season loss?
I'd have to think about that. I don't know if that's it. It might be up there. It's the worst ending. It's one of the worst endings, but when I think of the worst loss, I'd probably think of something that was probably, you know, a little bit more meaningful.
But the fact that you can't instantly think of anything, I think, means right away that's the worst regular season loss.
That's because of it's a memorable ending. So, like, they lost it on a horrible play in which the coaching was just horrible in regard to who was out on the field, the personnel. And the execution, the tackling, it was all around a really bad play, and they left points on the board. But worst game, worst loss, no, because for me at least, it's not like a death sentence for this team. There's implications there, but I think they'll get past it. I think it's just a loss that had a really crappy ending in a game that they just didn't play very well.
So the only thing I think that rivals it, and at first I was thinking, okay, it has to be football because regular season games in the other sports don't mean as much. And this was sort of a playoff game. The only thing that rivals it is the end of the 2011 Red Sox season, that game in Baltimore.
Yeah, and that was worse because not only did you have that game in Baltimore, you had the Rays that came back from like a 5-run
right.
deficit to leapfrog. And that was just the sequence of events on that final game of the regular season. And it happened in the National League with the Braves as well. That was one of the craziest sequences in sports
right.
that I've seen.
Capped a historic collapse, knocked the Red Sox out of the playoffs, all of that. But like you said, the good news for the Patriots is the implications were not as bad as they could have been. Now, the one seed's probably out of the question at this point. They're two games back with three to go. The Chiefs play the Chargers tonight. We'll get into that. And then they go to Seattle, which could be a tough game. And then they got Oakland to finish it off. So the Chiefs would have to lose two out of three, and the Patriots would have to win out in order to get the one seed. That seems unlikely. But you had Houston lose to the Colts, and you had the Steelers lose to the lowly, lowly Oakland Raiders, which I think for Steelers fans was as painful of a loss. What does the hit mean for the team chemistry? But standings-wise, it didn't do much. And I would say that Steelers loss is pretty pitiful. My brother, who goes to school in Pittsburgh, actually texted me that night. Or I texted him. I said, don't let any Steelers fans talk crap to you. They lost to the Raiders. The Raiders suck. And my brother lives in a house with five other people, and it's Patriots, Eagles, and Steelers fans. And he said that night, because the Eagles had a bad loss too, they were all just going around like doing bed checks, making sure everybody was okay. But back to the point at hand, and we can talk about the play, let's talk about the play first, actually, because here's my theory, and then I'll let you go. If you look back at Belichick's history in Cleveland, and I believe Parcells did this with the Giants when Belichick was there, when Phil Simms was a little older and his arm didn't quite have it, if the backup quarterback had a stronger arm, Belichick occasionally on those long, like borderline Hail Marys, would put the backup quarterback in to make that throw. Now, Ryan Tannehill can't throw the ball 70 yards. Brock Osweiler can throw it 65, and then all you need is it tipped backwards, like we saw to A.J. Green a couple years ago. I wonder if Belichick got too smart for his own good thought the Dolphins were going to put Brock Osweiler in the game to throw the Hail Mary and couldn't call a timeout, when didn't have enough time to call a timeout when he realized what was happening. He said on Monday, part of the issue was the Patriots coaching staff did a poor job recognizing the personnel on the field. I think he expected Brock Osweiler to be in there to throw the Hail Mary. Now, that's not an excuse. He should have realized it and called a timeout. But, I mean, everybody's searching for answers. That's what I think happened.
That's a really good take. I like that theory a lot. I don't know, though. I think even with that, leaving Devin McCourty off the field is a horrible look. That's one of your best defensive players. He's your fastest guy. He's a captain. He's someone who is as good of an open field tackler as you have. And I think you have to be prepared for anything on those plays. And guess what? Ryan Tannehill was playing up until that point. I know that he was out for a little bit, but he was playing on that last drive, if I remember correctly.
He was, but the idea is just for the Hail Mary, because they had the first play of the drive. They could have put Osweiler in just for that play. He's like a Hail Mary specialist.
Then at the very least, you're getting too cute. And even with that, Rob Gronkowski being in there, if you're going to put an offensive player on the field, why not Josh Gordon? And maybe he was banged up, because he did take a couple shots during that game. It seems like, much like Gronk, he does take a lot of shots and he gets banged up.
Not to defend Bill Belichick too much, but I actually asked a football coach about this. And what he told me is that the jumper, that guy in the back, that's actually not easy to do. The way it was described to me is it's very easy to do if you don't mind taking a penalty. And the Patriots have, in certain teams, and when I hear certain teams do things, I imagine the Patriots do them. Some teams will even bring in referees in training camp, to like former referees, to train with those guys so they learn exactly where the line is of what's a pass interference and what's not on a Hail Mary play. I don't think Bill Belichick would be comfortable putting Josh Gordon back there if he hasn't gone through the Patriots training in what it takes to be a jumper. Clearly, Gronk has been trained for that role. He's had that role, you know, going back to 2011. I don't know that Belichick would be comfortable, as banged up as Gronk is, putting anybody else back there, because if you put somebody else back there who's maybe not as experienced with it and they draw a pass interference and then the Dolphins get a play from the 1 yard line and punch it in, you have the same problem. Now, Obi Melifonwu, who has the NFL combine record for the highest vertical, was a jumper in college. If there's anybody who should have been back there, maybe it's him, but that's another story for another day.
But, and even with that, you have a guy in Gronk who just had the best game of the season, his best game of the season. Finally, he's moving well. He's looking good. Why do you feel the need to put your best players out in the field in situations that they don't need to be in? And that goes back to a guy like Julian Edelman returning punts, and a lot of top tier skills position guys returning punts and
because
kicks.
Again, I believe Belichick expected a Hail Mary, and in a Hail Mary, Rob Gronkowski, again, what actually took place is indefensible. But if they do throw a Hail Mary, the Patriots do need Rob Gronkowski out there.
They don't need him out there. I think you can get by with Devin McCourty out there. I think
Rob Gronkowski. You need somebody who can get up from the back of the pile and push that ball down. And the fact that Gronk is way taller than anybody on the defense. The Patriots do not have a lot of height on defense. And I don't want to put somebody back there who's not trained in that role, because a pass interference penalty is as inexcusable as what happened. If you have a Hail Mary and you pass interfere, that's just as bad as what took place. I don't want to risk a pass interference penalty on that play.
Well, of course, but you have a guy who's injury prone and you're telling him to get back there and jump up in a crowd of about, you know, 8 or 9 people. Why would you even risk that? Why would you risk the health of one of your best players who is finally looking good? I still don't think it's excusable, and I think moving forward, you'll probably see Belichick go away from Gronk, either go to Josh Gordon, or just not even put an offensive player out there in the first place, because guess what? The hook and ladder, it can work, especially if you tackle as poorly as the Patriots did on that last play. Even Ian Eagle thought that it was going to be the play was over. They played like that play was over. So,
oh yeah, the reality was awful. The Patriots played that at about 40%.
Yeah, and the reality is like there was a lot wrong with that, a lot more wrong with that play than just having Gronk out there. But it's just one of those things that just brings up the argument: why put a star player out on the field in a situation in which you can't get hurt relatively easily, when you can just go with a defensive guy or someone else, or just recognize the situation.
That's where the problem is. Again, yeah. I am fine with Gronk being out there because if you look at their depth chart on that play, Rob Gronkowski is on the Patriots defensive depth chart for one formation. He is a starting safety. And I know that's getting super technical, but he is. Yeah. But you need to recognize the situation that the ball that there's not going to be a jump ball. He's not going to have a chance to knock that pass down. Brock Osweiler is not in the game, or they're not throwing a Hail Mary. They're running a hook and ladder, and that's when you need to call a timeout and get the right personnel on the field. They were doomed when the ball was snapped by having him out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
They were not ready for what the Dolphins ran, and the Dolphins were not going to run a Hail Mary with a banged up Ryan Tannehill in the game in that situation.
Yeah. Even with that, though, there are positives there, I say, from that game.
Oh, no. I mean, absolutely. Go ahead. Sorry.
I mean, you got Gronk, who did, as I said, he played the best game of his season. He finally got involved in the red zone. Brady looked comfortable with him. Josh Gordon continues to play well. That offense in general.
Well, let's not forget, I think Julian Edelman had his best game.
Yeah, Julian Edelman as well. Yeah, and he was definitely overshadowed by what we saw from Brady and Gronk. And there were just a lot of mental mistakes, and usually those get corrected by the Patriots. So given that history, I'm not all that concerned with how they played. I think they will pick it up. I'm as confident in them as I was after that Vikings win, rather.
Yep.
So I still feel confident in this team. The run defense definitely needs to step it up, but these are correctable mistakes. And with a team like the Patriots, they seem to do that. They seem to correct those mistakes more often than not.
So I'm a little back and forth on it because never in my lifetime have I seen the Patriots lose a game they have to win in the regular season. And that's what Sunday is in Pittsburgh. They have to win that game. But at the same time, you know, it took them 4 weeks to bounce back from the Super Bowl. Remember, they sucked in September. They were not that good of a team in September, especially on the road where they're going to be this weekend. So I just don't – and look, I've been down there. I was down there yesterday. I don't want to say they were in great spirits, but the locker room was as it usually is. You know, it didn't – I know I wasn't down there on Tuesday. I talked to people who were down there on Tuesday. They said, you know, there was definitely, you know, something – there's a cloud hanging over the team, and they were still definitely thinking about it. Wednesday did not feel like that. Wednesday felt like business as usual. If the Patriots can get back to business as usual, I think they can beat a banged up in unmotivated Steelers team right now. I really think they can. But that's a lot to get over, especially defensively. And this is a much – don't get confused on just that one play. The Dolphins offense had a great game all around on Sunday.
Yeah.
And if you can't shut down that team, I mean, Pittsburgh's going to put up 45, 50 points if the Patriots played defensively on Sunday like they did against the Dolphins. Now, they also locked down the Vikings and Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. And I think the Vikings are – a lot more similar offensively than to the Steelers than the Dolphins are. And this could just be a case of the Patriots playing down to their opponents. But I'm a little worried about it. The only thing that's kind of, you know, making me double think it is the Steelers suck. They've lost three in a row. They just lost to the Raiders, who are awful. So, and you look at the context of the AFC picture right now, the Steelers are more so in a divisional race than anything. They are. No, more so they are. They're in a divisional race more so than Ravens anything right else. There. Right, Patriots are playing for a bye. The Ravens, the Steelers are playing to get in the playoffs. I did my the ESPN playoff machine the other day. I have the Steelers out. I have the Steelers not making it.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how the Steelers play down the stretch, and I think this will tell you exactly how they're going to finish the season. And you could argue that this weekend is the difference between them making the playoffs or not. And given the fact that they just lost to the Raiders, they've let game after game slip away from them. They just look mentally weak. I don't know how you could have confidence in this team. So that's really the reason I'm not worried about this weekend specifically is more so having to do with how the Steelers have been playing more so than the Patriots.
It's more that you're down on the Steelers. It's more about the opponent. Okay.
I also think that the Patriots will respond. When they play games like these, you know the numbers, you know the statistics. They're very good after losses. And I'm not going to compare it directly to that Vikings game because they were at home, prime time. That was prime time against the team that, wasn't used to playing against Belichick and Brady, let alone at Gillette Stadium. This is a rivalry that we're familiar with. The Patriots have really dominated this rivalry in the first place. So there's more familiarity there. I do think that the Patriots will come in there and have a decent performance on Sunday. It's games like these that kind of prove what your team's worth is, and the Patriots are the Patriots, and I'm not going to lose confidence in them.
And let's not forget, it's a borderline trap game for the Steelers. I mean, it's tough to think that, you know, Patriots Steelers could be a trap game, but they got to go on the road to New Orleans in Week 16. So things are far from over. They have as tough back. They may have, of all the teams left, as tough of a schedule as anybody. Real quick on Chargers Chiefs tonight, not about the actual game, the Stephen A. Smith clip where he talks about Spencer Ware, who is out, Hunter Henry, who has been out since July, and Derek Johnson, who hasn't played in the league this season, has not been on a roster this season. Just outstanding. Just proof that those guys do not do research. They go out there and they spew the first bullcrap that comes to their mind. Unlike us, we do so much research.
I mean, that's sports. I mean, that's really media in general these days. It's just you go out there, you get really emotional. You say your point with a lot of conviction and energy, and people will believe it. Or they'll trust that you know what you're talking about, and that's not always the case. Stephen A. Smith's a extremely talented guy. He's found his niche. I won't even say he's found his niche. He's just an extremely talented sports media personality. That's what he is. He's a personality. He's not working for the Philadelphia Inquirer anymore. He's full blown WWE sport take mode, and I think it kind of proved that he's more concerned with the. I guess the acting of it rather than the informative aspect of his job. Hey, and that's fine. I think real sports fans aren't really tuning into First Take in the first place.
Right. First Take's just there so there's something to put on mute on TVs at restaurants and gyms during the day. And let's not forget Teddy Bruschi during that clip was absolutely priceless.
Oh, that's great.
We actually have some baseball talk to get into. We'll do that on the other side. Nice. This is Calling It, powered by CLNS.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
We are recording this on December 13th, so naturally let's talk some baseball. It's Alex Barth and Alex Lebowitz. This is the Calling It podcast, powered by CLNS. The winter meetings, I think, officially wrapped up today in Vegas. I believe today was the last day. It is, because I saw a Snapchat from Jesse Feldman at the Las Vegas airport. So I
shout out Jesse
on his way out. Shout out to Feldman. He's a great friend of ours. Fantastic guy. But the Red Sox, as always, are players. Despite winning the World Series, there's still a lot going on with that team. There's a couple places we can start, but I want to start with Craig Kimbrell, because Craig Kimbrell was one of my favorite Red Sox his time in Boston. Reminds me of a guy who was my favorite Red Sox on the team a couple of years ago, and that's Jonathan Papelbon. And he's going out just like Jonathan Papelbon, asking for an obscene amount of money he has no shot at getting. I think it's 6 years, $100 million. I don't think the Red Sox are going to pay him. As much as I love him, I don't think they should pay him that. I'm fine if he walks with that. But I'm telling you, like, if you got little kids, just teach them how to throw a baseball, and they'll be set for life. Lefty specialists make $10 million a year. It's wild what relief pitchers can ask for. Because I do think anybody will give Kimbrell that. I wouldn't be shocked if some team gets stupid and gives him that.
I don't know. I think it's really eager. And he could be a guy that's not signed come March, like J.D. Martinez last year. Because, I mean, what closer is really making that amount of money? Maybe Aroldis Chapman is, but – I mean, the teams that can't afford guys like that seem to already have guys like that. So I don't know what team would take a chance on him. Again, that's a lot of money for a back-end reliever. I don't think he's going to get that, but he will get overpaid. I mean, 6 years is just as egregious as the figures. So we'll see how it turns out. But, I mean, if you're the Red Sox, it's a no-brainer. You stay clear of that guy, especially given the way he performed this postseason.
Well, you talk about the years, he's 30.
Yeah.
And guys who throw like he does, that velocity doesn't hold up much beyond 30. And the velocity is everything he has. So hypothetically, if a team signed him to that contract, I mean, depending on how the money works out, but let's say they split it evenly, you're paying a 36-year-old Craig Kimbrell almost $17 million in 2026, I think, if I did that math right.
Yep. No,
so,
you did, right?
Yeah. No, 2025.
Five,
because it's a 6-year deal, yes. So just a ridiculous concept. But again, I would not, if he gets it, it's a mistake. But I would not be shocked if he gets it.
And hey, he should go after that contract. He got his ring. Not that I think that would make a difference.
I mean, we should all go after that contract. I would love that contract.
Yeah, I want it.
I wouldn't even really care what the job was if I had that contract.
I would do anything.
I'll clean porta potties for 6 years for $100 million.
Literally exactly what I was about to say. I'll clean porta potties for that much money. Great minds think about dirty things.
And we've been doing the show for too long, my friend.
Yes. I mean, he should go after it. He won his World Series. But again, I'm trying to think of teams that would be willing to give him that contract. The only team that comes to mind that gives stupid deals to players or takes on bad contracts, you know, it's the Dodgers. And they just signed Joe Kelly. Not that that's going to be their
closing. Actually a pretty good deal. I $8 million a year for 3 years. I think that's – I mean, there's – and Tony Mass was talking about this, the belief that, you know, do they think he's going to be what he was in the World Series? Is that why they signed him? Because that's not who he is.
No.
It's who he is at times, but I mean, we all know.
Yeah, and I didn't think that was a horrible deal. No. I think people overreacted to it because, I mean, Joe Kelly's got balls, and I think that does that bring something to the locker room. It is nice to see, and it's he's a good asset. So, I think given that fact, sure, 8 years or $8 million, 3 years for a setup guy, if he does end up being that. Sure, I think that's more than fair. And Joe Kelly, I mean, it's undeniable. He has some nasty stuff. It's just a matter of if he can be consistent or not.
So now people are wondering with the Red Sox maybe needing another starting pitcher, needing some bullpen help, what trades are on the way, the hot names. Rick Porcello, who I think I said when we wrapped things up in October, I thought should get traded. Now with the contract of Aldi, I think, you know, he's not coming back next year anyway. He's a guy you can actually get something for, whether it's a couple of decent bullpen arms, maybe a young bat because the farm system's drained, something like that. I think you move Porcello. You have enough starters. You don't have people as good, but with your top four right now, right, you can throw in a guy like Hector Velasquez or a Brian Johnson or a Steven Wright if he's healthy as your fifth starter and be okay.
You're going to need another because Eduardo Rodriguez is going to get hurt again.
Well, that's true, and that's true. But they do have Tanner Houck could potentially be ready this year. Mm. Not to start, but, you know, midsummer, he could be ready. And then the other two, which are really interesting, Xander Bogaerts and Jackie Bradley Jr. You pick one name, I'll pick the other and give your thoughts here. I'll let you pick who you want.
I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr. should have been traded a while ago. You have really four guys. You have Betts, Benintendi, Bogaerts, and Bradley Jr. You can't keep all of them. It's kind of similar to what the Reds
do. Don't forget Sale in there, too.
Sale, and you can even include Devers, although he has a while until he's up. Sale, absolutely. That's one of them. Bradley's clearly the odd man out. He's probably going to be one of multiple odd men out. And you got to get something for him because he is also represented by Scott Boras, so he's going to want stupid money. You have JD Martinez, who, guess what? He has a player option after this season, too, so add him to the list. I would trade Jackie Bradley Jr. in a heartbeat, and I probably would have done it last season.
Yeah, I have no problem with them trading Bradley. Xander, I think you just hold him under control. I know you could get something really good for him, but CJ Chatham's not going to be ready for two more years. That's their top shortstop prospect right now. And I think he'll be – I saw him on the Cape. I think he'll be a good player, and I'd be fine handing it off to him in 2 years. But, you know, you just won a World Series. You could realistically win another one in the next 2 years, whether it's next year or the year after. I think Xander's a guy, if he leaves and you don't get anything back for him, if you got two – actually, it would be three rings out of him because he was with the team in 2013. If you get three rings out of him, I don't think he's somebody they need to trade. Now, if you can get like a Syndergaard maybe in return, yeah, sure, you do that. It's like, yeah, I don't trade Kyrie unless it's for Anthony Davis, and I know I'm opening a whole jar there, but I the Xander trade I don't really get. If the return's big, I think you go with it, but Bradley's somebody you get off the team and you don't let him leave for nothing because he is replaceable and you can get something of quality for him. Same with Rick Porcello. I'm fine letting the clock run out on Xander Bogaerts. I think he's a good enough player that if you don't get – and look, let's say in 2020, his last year, let's say you're out of it at that point. Let's say Sale's arm falls apart. David Price comes back down to earth. Martinez leaves. You trade him at the deadline. You still get a pretty good prospect. So I hold on to Xander Bogaerts right now. I think it's too early to sell.
Yeah, I probably would. I also think there's a problem with Bogaerts, too, in regard to consistency. You know, this year he had a good season, and I think Cora is partially to credit for that. But prior to that, he's been up and down. He's someone who has at times been considered a top five shortstop or one of the next best young players in the league. And at other times, he strikes out all the time and he can't hit for power. I don't know who we're going to get this season. And I do think right now his value is pretty high. So depending on the return, I'd obviously be willing to part ways with him. But he can be a valuable person. And he's probably my second in line for who I would get rid of right behind JBJ.
And, of course, the Red Sox still need a closer, and we know what's going on with Chris Sale, but we will discuss that at another time because it's a long offseason, and we'll put out little morsels of baseball as we go. Last up, we got a great third segment for you today. One of the biggest states in the country, making a bid at being the worst state. Which one is that? We'll talk about it on the other side. This is Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Almost heaven. Welcome back to Callin' It. Alex Barth and Alex Lovewitz with you. There's a story. Was it this morning or did it happen yesterday? And it was reacted to today.
Came out last night.
Last night, okay. That California is considering adding a tax for text messages, and there's a tongue twister for you. A tax per text. Now, before we get into our main point, and Lebitz, I know you talked about this morning on your show, but the one thing it reminded me of, and this made me feel old, I saw these people on Twitter just reacting like, "Oh my god, like paying to text, like I can't imagine that, like that's so wrong, it's a right." Do you remember when it used to cost 10 cents per text message? Like when that feature first came out?
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest. I had Sprint, which caused some a lot of adolescent bullying. But right. Guess what? The data plans were tight. So I was able to text. I was able to go online and I was laughing at everyone else.
So I had Verizon, and it was the text messages were free to other people who had Verizon. If they didn't, it was 10 cents a message, and I used to always text people. The first text was, "Do you have Verizon?" Because if they didn't, I knew my dad would kill me for texting them. And I mean, it may have ruined a middle school relationship or two, perhaps. We'll never know. I would like to think that's the reason things didn't progress, but maybe it's my ugly ass nose. Who's to say? But anyway, California thinking about instituting this, and I there's a lot of questions you could have, and I know you talked about the political aspect of it, but you know, if I like go to California, right? Let's say this passes and I go to California, is it just California residents, or is it every text I send from California is going to be taxed? If I want to text my cousin in California, is that going to be taxed even if I'm texting from Massachusetts? Like
so. I'm pretty sure it's a tax that's assessed on the corporations, and then they'll hand it off to you and on texting. So it'll be a part of your monthly phone bill, is from my understanding.
Oh, great, because that needs to be bigger.
Yeah, honestly. So I'm pretty sure it's pretty much a residential thing from what I gathered.
All right.
But it's still dumb. Like, come on.
It is still stupid, and I mean, that's going to be a thing with California, right? It's like – to use an opposite as an example, New Hampshire, no sales tax, right? And everybody loves that. And people go like in Northern Massachusetts, you'd know better than me. You're from there. People will go from Northern Massachusetts or from Eastern Vermont or potentially even Eastern New York to go to New Hampshire to make purchases because they know they don't have to pay sales tax. And is this stigma going to be attached to California? And that leads us to a discussion I've talked about on past shows. I have behind on my desk a whiteboard, and I list opportunities, things we can talk about in this third segment, and one of them is worst state in the U.S. Now, we're not going to have a political discussion, Lebowitz. We're not going to talk about electoral college strength or political leanings or Beto O'Rourke or anything like that. This is just like when we rank the states in New England, right? Like, worst state in the U.S. Now, California's got some stuff going for it, certainly. I don't know that having to send, and you mentioned the residency thing, which kind of kills my argument, but I don't know that having to spend money for every text you send within the state would make it the worst state, but it would certainly like plummet it on the list.
Yeah, well, here's the thing with California, and I put New York in the same category. Yeah, we'll clump Texas in there as well.
Okay.
There were a few major cities that are awesome. San Diego, I'm sure San Francisco is cool, although they have a problem with homeless poop.
San Francisco, it's the city smells horrible, but there's some cool things to do there.
No, it's a great city. It's deteriorated in the past half decade if you read up on how bad like a lot of the problems are there. And L.A., of course, and Sacramento is supposed to be a nice city. But the in-between, what is there? There's nothing. It's desert. It's a lot of drought-ridden lands. It's wildfires. Texas.
There's like Yosemite or Yellowstone. Which one's in California? I think it's Yosemite, right?
I think it's one of those Ys. Yeah.
That's –
There's Joshua Tree.
Right. There's some cool stuff out there. Where you were going with those states that I think – this is kind of like what you said. You know, let's take New York, right? New York City, cool place to be. Upstate New York, cool place to be. But two very different things. Right?
Yeah, and I'm not even going to give upstate New York any credit.
Okay. Half of our listeners have very strong ties there, but okay.
Screw them. No, Long Island, New York City. Those are two areas that are relevant in New York. You get an hour north of the city. Albany, why the hell is that?
Well, so that's the thing with New York. There's a give and take because you have to factor in the rest of it. I went to Buffalo in October. Buffalo sucks. Outside of the wings, it is a desolate wasteland. And that certainly takes away from the aura of New York City. Also, I would count Long Island as a negative. I have family from there. I have family from Long Island. 99% of the people from Long Island are lunatics. All right? That place is like – it's
– I feel like Long Island is a horizontal Massachusetts.
No, how dare you, sir?
In Mass, it's like you get east of Worcester is where everyone is. You go west of Worcester, it's people who are living off the grid. You take that and you put it in the you edit the photo and you flip it once. That's Long Island, except maybe a little bit more some more people. You got beach, you got the water, you got all that good stuff, vacation spots. It's
Long Island is just more New Jersey.
Okay,
it's in the contention for worst state.
I'll give Massachusetts the edge. I'm not saying that it's not better, but it isn't as bad as upstate New York is the main point. Because think about like Plattsburgh, like you go way up by the Canadian
border. That's true. All those Empire 8 road trips to like Schenectady and Utica and Oneonta. No,
Schenectady is not bad. Schenectady is more.
What the hell's in Schenectady?
Well, it's right next to Albany. It's in a more relevant.
What the hell's in Albany?
There's not much to do there, but in regard to a central location, it's not as out of the way as like Elmira or like Syracuse. Syracuse is
Portland.
Rochester. Who the hell cares about Rochester?
Yes.
It's only people from Rochester. Yes, that's it. Shout out.
We have a lot of Ithaca College shout outs going on this episode.
We do. And then you look at Texas. Just one more. You look at Texas. And Texas is the same thing. You have Dallas, Austin, Houston.
Well, it's East Texas and West Texas. They're two very different places.
Well, then you're not a good state. Like, you can't divide. Although I'm saying Massachusetts is pretty much East.
So I will say this. Like, well, it's not nearly the same division as Texas, but
no.
I would give a state points for having, multiple – like California, right? You could be skiing and then the same day be on the beach if you're willing to drive a little bit. California has multiple faces, whereas a state like, Michigan, I mean, it's a bigger state. There's a lot to do, but it's one – there's Michigan is pretty universal across the board, Michigan. And I know people from Michigan will probably say, oh, no, there's Upper Peninsula, Lower Peninsula. No, Michigan's Michigan. Illinois is Illinois, like that. Okay, but back to the crux of the argument.
Okay, yes.
Worst state. I think that a lot of contenders are going to come from the Northeast. I think New Jersey's on there. Northeast Mid-Atlantic.
Okay, I'm going opposite.
I would put New Jersey and Delaware towards the top of the list. I've been to Delaware. There is zero reason to ever go to Dover, Delaware. Okay? It's the capital. It's literally a suburb. There's a huge racetrack, which is cool. I don't know, the two times a year they have a race. And besides that, there's one strip with a bunch of diners and cheap motels and then just people's houses. And that's your capital. What kind of city is that, right? The hotel I stayed at didn't have a door on the bathroom. There was a shower curtain that didn't cover the whole space. Dover sucks. Delaware sucks. They're towards the bottom of the list for me, as is New Jersey. I mean, Jersey Shore. I don't need to give any more reason. The Jersey Shore is an abomination on our culture. It came from New Jersey. New Jersey towards the bottom of the list as well.
The only thing New Jersey has going for it, here's what it doesn't have
Bruce
going for
Springsteen.
It.
That's it.
Yeah, he's all right.
Whoa, hold on. Hold on.
I think he's overrated personally.
I've been doing a podcast with you for a year and a half. And you think Bruce Springsteen's overrated?
I like some of his songs. He's not one of my favorites. You see, here's the thing.
Have to be one of your favorites, but to say he's like, look.
I respect him. I respect the fact that
Why other people enjoy him.
I do. I get the appeal. He's 84 years old and he does 4-hour shows.
Same way about Billy Joel. I understand why people enjoy his music. It's not my cup of tea.
I like Billy Joel a lot. And you should be on Billy Joel's side. Come on.
No, I can't say I like Billy Joel because my favorite Billy Joel song is We Didn't Start the Fly Like Billy Joel because I even like the wrong song.
It's a good sign. There's no wrong.
What does New Jersey have going for it?
New Jersey, this is what it has going for it and what it doesn't have going for it. What it has going for it is that it's bordering New York City and Philadelphia. What it doesn't have going for it is the two best destinations in New Jersey aren't even in New Jersey.
And I think that sums it up perfectly.
It does.
They've got great location and they just do nothing with it.
Exactly. It's a prime spot, a port state, cheap gas. They even pump your gas for you. They have Wawa, which is a very convenient store. It's not horrible. I'm a Northeast bias type of guy. So I think of worst states, I think of West Virginia, which is mid Atlantic.
The song Country Roads automatically removes West Virginia from the bottom of the list. They're not really at the top, but that's such a good song. I wouldn't put them in my bottom five.
You see, that's the only. Watch The Wonderful Whites of West Virginia. I think that's the name of it. It's on Netflix, and it's about a family that lives in West Virginia, and all they do is commit crime and get arrested.
Okay, West Virginia gave us Randy Moss, future quarterback Will Greer, and Take Me Home, Country Roads. Decent state.
Take Me Home, Country. John Denver. You just say John Denver. He's included.
Well, he's not from West Virginia.
Is he not from West Virginia?
John Denver is not from West Virginia. I always want to say he's from Colorado, but that's because his last name is Denver.
He's not. But that goes back to the old
Dumb and Dumber joke.
I thought the Rockies would be a little bit rockier than this. That John Denver is full of shit.
Okay, so West Virginia. Where else?
I'd go like the Missouri Mississippi clump, like that whole region.
See, I like the South though. The South's got character to it.
No, it doesn't.
What about states that don't have any character? What about Kansas? Does Kansas do anything for us? What does Kansas bring to the table besides corn, which we can get from any of the other four states in that area?
But Kansas is more – I think of Kansas, I think of farmers and hard work and blue-collar people.
Okay, that's fair.
When I think of Missouri, I think it just – or Mississippi or that area. I just think about obesity or something. I don't know.
Then go with Wisconsin. And I think you can put – what has Wisconsin given us besides that 70s show?
Making a Murderer.
Yeah, I did not find that entertaining.
It's it's not a good thing that's
like I would put Wisconsin towards the bottom of the list. I don't think they have that strong of an identity. They haven't really given.
But it's on a lake. So you have Lake Michigan?
Not the state.
No, but it's a part of the state. It's a commodity that you have. It's a vacation spot. You're bordering another country, which is kind of cool, right? I mean, well, you're bordering you're near an ocean, but you're kind of in the. I look at that as the Missouri
that's
that area.
Maine. That's Maine. You just described Maine.
What?
Wisconsin, which isn't by an ocean, by the way. Not sure where you got.
No, not an ocean. I'm talking about. I was saying Missouri in that area is kind of close to an ocean.
Ocean? What? Missouri's right in the middle of the country.
Missouri? No, I'm thinking it's one state away from the Gulf of Mexico.
That's not an ocean. That's a gulf.
Well, it's a part of the Atlantic. It's an outlet of the Atlantic Ocean.
All right, sure.
It goes right into the Atlantic Ocean. What are you talking about?
No. You did just mention – I mean you're very close to a state that normally is mentioned very quickly in this discussion, worst state.
Maine?
And I'm surprised neither of us brought it up. No. If you're talking Gulf of Mexico, who is the
– Alabama.
No, hey, whoa. Don't.
Alabama stinks.
Crimson, Roll Tide. They give us Nick Saban.
Hey, you can like the Crimson Tide. I don't have an opinion on them, but you can like them and still acknowledge that. Besides Tuscaloosa, there's nothing to do in.
They're the whole identity of the state, though.
Exactly. That's brutal. That's not a good thing. About even the Patriots, which you know may way better. Even they're not the identity of.
Okay, so what about Florida? Because Florida's always mentioned in this discussion. Florida, without a doubt, the most interesting state.
It's the most interesting, but guess what? It's a good time. It's a good time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I crap on Florida as much as the next guy. I can acknowledge that you can find some good spots in Florida. This is what I'll say, though. You go to northern Florida, like Tallahassee, and like you go to the border of like what's bordering it? Is it
Alabama?
Georgia. Alabama, and then it's Louisiana. You go to like that area. That's, I mean, I wouldn't want to be like on the thin.
What about
margin.
Like Daytona Beach?
That'd be fun. And so, my brother went there. He went to the race down there, and he said it was unbelievable. And I would love to do that. So there's stuff to do in Florida. There's nothing to do in Alabama. There's nothing to do in Mississippi, Missouri. You got Kansas City. I'll count that.
How about Utah?
Utah.
Utah, without a doubt, the most pointless place to host an Olympics, by the way.
Well, not really. The skiing's phenomenal. If Winter Olympics?
Yeah, I guess if you're a skier, Utah's good.
It actually makes a lot of sense because it shouldn't be necessarily just a destination. You should have the resources. It's better than Sochi where they had to make fake snow. So Utah stinks. You have Salt Lake. That's about it. And it's very religious. They kind of got their own thing going. It's
And I mean, the only other two that come to mind. See, I actually am a fan of the Dakotas because I would love to one summer go out to like one of the Dakotas or Wyoming or Montana and just do hang out in the mountains, fish, golf, hike, all of that.
There's
I think there's a lot of worth out there.
Oh, absolutely. There's a reason I didn't mention Montana, Wyoming, the Dakotas.
Tom Brady has a house out there. It can't be that bad.
Well, it's isolated, and that's appealing to me.
Right. The one other one, it's not really one state. Like, North Carolina's cool. South Carolina's cool. I don't know that we needed two Carolinas.
Yeah, what's that about?
That just seems like overkill to me.
Same thing with the Virginias, though.
That's true. But at least there's like a Virginia. And then West Virginia is like, you know, it's not West and East. It's
and even
Virginia
the
and West Virginia.
The Dakotas, because you put them together, it's essentially just Minnesota. So it's the same size.
Yeah, but I had Minnesota. Oh, no, I had Wisconsin towards the bottom of my list. I put Minnesota on there, too. The Mall of America is so overrated.
Minnesota's not the Twin Cities, Minnesota, Minneapolis, and St. Paul, they're both like awesome cities. I was there last year, and they call it the. The Lake State, or the whatever they call. There's a
Land of a Thousand Lakes.
So that's a vacation spot. So that would be a fun area. Like in the summer, Minnesota is a great area. Great hockey too.
So okay, we're at like 17 minutes on this, which is seven more minutes I plan on going. Worst state, have to pick one. Go.
Jeez, it's so hard to pin it down. I'm gonna go with. I'll go with Mississippi.
Okay. I'm going to go with one we haven't talked about it, but we talked about it when we did the New England states, Connecticut.
No, come on.
It's like Delaware, but with New Yorkers.
But New Haven, you have amazing pizza in New Haven. You're on the water.
Pizza a lot of places. They claim to be New Englanders. They want the best of both worlds, okay? They want to be from New England, but they also want to be from New York. You don't get both of those things. You get one, and they pick the wrong one.
This is clear.
I'm out on Connecticut and Delaware, my bottom two. It might be a tie.
This is clearly too personal for you. Delaware. Here's the thing with Delaware. I never think of Delaware, so I'm not even going to include it. It's like
It sucks, right? It was the first state, and here's my closing argument for Delaware is the worst state. I'm actually changing it from Connecticut.
Okay,
Delaware is the worst state because it was the first state. Every state since then is progress, right? Why did we keep going after Delaware? Because it wasn't good enough. We needed more states. I'd like to think every state since the first one is better. And I think you can make an argument that Hawaii is the best state. So did we go worst to best? Yes, with Massachusetts thrown towards the top because that's the exception.
Okay, I get that. I think Delaware, the history – you mentioned the history. I think that's a point that's in favor of Delaware.
What history does Delaware have besides being the first? Like they were like, okay, cool, Delaware's a state. And then they did everything in Philadelphia and in Boston. They didn't stay there. They left. They made it a state and they left.
Well, maybe they didn't want to destroy it. They were like, well, you know, Philadelphia.
No, because they didn't want to be there because they were like, oh boy, fucking Dover. Like, this is great. Let's go somewhere else. Like, we don't – we have this whole – there's all this land now. Like, let's stay in Dover. Woohoo! Like, F Dover. And then I know that there's other parts of Delaware, but it's like this big. Dover's one city, but it's still half the state, okay? I'm walking it in. Dover is the worst state. Delaware is the worst state. Dover is the worst state capital.
Somehow you convinced me that I have to go see Delaware to just find out firsthand what it's all about. Because this is you know what? I'm going to drive through. I'm gonna drive down to Florida, which we decide is not the worst state. And on my way, I'm stopping in Delaware. It's what? Most interesting. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So that's the state I'd least want to live in. I'll say that.
Florida?
That's one of them. That's top five.
Florida sure. And – okay, I guess not Nevada, but like Las Vegas. Las Vegas is like eating cake. If you eat a slice of cake, like that's good. Like if or Las Vegas, like eating cake for dinner. You do it like one or two nights, that's cool. You do it for 2 weeks, you're gonna die.
I've been to Las Vegas, and I have friends, family friends that live out there. There are actually a lot of people who live out there. It's not a bad area, even to just settle down in. It's actually really nice.
Maybe
there's
if
a lot of
people.
You
live there, you learn how to taper yourself, but like a Las Vegas vacation should be capped at like 4 days.
Yes, absolutely. And I haven't gone there
Vegas
as an adult.
Like the strip. Like Vegas for more than 4 days, you have problems.
But you're near like Arizona and Utah, and you're near California. It's a kind of a central location in that region. So I hear you though. Las Vegas, I wouldn't want to live there. But it's not the worst place to live. You'd be surprised. A lot of people settle there. So, UNLV.
So you're going with you went with what state again?
Mississippi.
So you're going with Mississippi. I'm going with Delaware. Let us know what you think on Twitter at Callin' It Podcast, the worst state of the 50 states. If you want to include Canada as a joke, that's fine, but I made that joke first. So there you go. Next week, we'll recap Pat Steelers. Obviously, that game has major implications. We'll look at the playoff picture. We will talk about the Celtics. You got a quick thought on the Celtics last night's game, overtime, Kyrie Irving?
Yeah, they're looking really good. Marcus Morris is one of the best bench players in the league, and I think we need to start asking questions on what Jaylen Brown's role is going to be moving forward, and maybe even what is his future in Boston.
I think that's a great question, and we will answer that question next week. Follow us on Twitter at Callin' It Podcast, powered by CLNS Media. You can check them out online at clnsmedia.com. This was a 21-minute segment, so it's going to be a very long show. Thanks for sticking with it all the way through. We appreciate it. We love you. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. This has been Callin' It. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you next week.